Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of July 5th, 2020. We'll begin, as we have been doing, with the latest press releases from the public health departments. First, from the Ford County. Ford County Public Health Department is announcing one new confirmed case. The individual is a male in his 20s. Ford County has a total of 42 confirmed positive cases. Of those, 31 of the previously reported confirmed cases have been removed from isolation, and 10 cases remain active. There has been one COVID-19-related death. These numbers are accurate as of release time, which was 3 p.m. July 9th. Public health officials continue to investigate and contact all individuals who may have had exposure to individuals that tested positive for COVID-19. Federal privacy restrictions prohibit the release of any further information. Ford County Public Health Department continues to encourage all residents to conduct preventive measures, including practicing three key steps, the three W's: wash your hands, watch your distance, and wear a face covering. COVID-19 appears to spread from person to person, mainly with close contact, less than 6 feet, but may also be spread by a surface that has the virus and then touching one's mouth, nose, or possibly one's eyes. Illinois Department of Public Health states that the spread is through respiratory droplets produced when an infected person speaks, coughs, or sneezes. Now from the Iroquois County Public Health Department. As of Thursday, July 9th, Iroquois County has 172 individuals with laboratory-confirmed cases of COVID-19. As of Thursday, the Iroquois County Public Health Department has received 3,440 test results for COVID-19. Of the 3,440 results, 3,268 have been negative and 172 have been positive. Here is the information shared by the Iroquois County Public Health Department about its cases confirmed on Thursday. Case 171 is a male in his 30s. And case 172 is also a male in his 30s. Of the 172 individuals with laboratory-confirmed cases, 150 have recovered and have been released from isolation. None are hospitalized, 17 remain isolated at home, and 5 have passed away. The Iroquois County Public Health Department is reporting congregate data regarding COVID-19. In an effort to clarify this data, we would like to provide a brief explanation. A confirmed case is an individual residing in Iroquois County who has a positive laboratory confirmation of COVID-19. The total confirmed case numbers we report include all individuals who have tested positive, regardless of their current status. This number will never decrease. Recovered cases are individuals who tested positive and after a minimum of 10 days are afebrile, that is, fever-free without fever-reducing medication, for at least 72 hours and respiratory symptoms have improved. The recovered cases are then released from isolation by the health department. We'll turn to the Ford County Chronicle for our first stories. GCMS alum Nick Munier graduates from West Point. West Point, New York. Cadet Nicholas M. Munier, son of Michael and Patricia Munier of Fort Myers, Florida, formerly of Melbourne, graduated from the United States Military Academy on Saturday, June 13th. Munier graduated from Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School in 2016. While at West Point, he concentrated his studies in law, cybersecurity, and engineering. He was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the United States Army within the infantry branch. Following his officer training and Ranger School at Fort Benning, Georgia, he will report to Fort Carson, Colorado for his first assignment. And now the latest from the Grand Ole Flag Project. Huge flagpole arrives on site. Paxton. A massive 150-foot flagpole was delivered in pieces last week to the grassy area just west of Paxton Buckley Loda High School, where it was assembled, welded together, and painted in preparation for being set in concrete later this month. The occasion marked a major milestone in the Paxton Grand Ole Flag Project, which Paxton Fire Chief Denny Kingren began organizing on Veterans Day in 2018. I'm terribly excited about it, Kingren said Friday. It gives me goosebumps every time I talk about it, because this is something that is going to be good for our community. Our country's been kind of in turmoil at the moment, or has been, so it's going to mean a lot. Workers for flagpoles, etc., delivered the huge flagpole in pieces last week and finished assembly, welding, and painting within 2 days. The company, based in Holly, Michigan, builds some 15 to 20 flagpoles of this size across the U.S. each year for schools, hospitals, and car dealerships, for example, said Foreman Randy Shuck. I pretty much tell everybody that I have the most patriotic job there is out there, Shuck said. It is always a good feeling to see them built, because once you see the flagpole go up, you see all the people's faces, and usually they have a dedication for them, and then you see everybody being so happy. The steel flagpoles are built to last, Shuck said. We have a bunch down south that we've done, and they've been had them all them hurricanes there and everything, but they've stayed up. In the next week or so, Kingren said he hoped to have local contractor Ron Roy dig a 15-foot deep, 8-foot wide hole for the flagpole's base. The following week, Kingren hopes to fill that hole with concrete donated by Paxson Ready Mix and then set the flagpole in place using a crane owned by Chris Stack of Custom Crane. It will stand there, flagless, until Sunday, September 13th, when Kingren expects to hold a ceremony for the raising of the flagpole's first 30-by-60-foot American flag. The flag-raising ceremony will immediately follow a patriotic parade and ceremony that Kingren expects to be a major event for our city. Invited to participate in the parade and ceremony will be local and state dignitaries, emergency personnel, military veterans, local organizations, and the high school's marching band directed by former U.S. Marine Tim Hess. It is also possible that the 100-plus motorcyclists who participate each year in the 9/11 Memorial Ride would be interested in taking part. The plan is for the 150-foot flagpole's first flag, donated by the American Paxton American Legion Post, to be carried in the parade from downtown to a spot just west of the high school's rear parking lot north of its football field, where it will be raised in ceremonial fashion. Later this summer, volunteers will build a 40-foot square concrete around the flagpole, plus a 65-foot long, 10-foot wide sidewalk leading to the memorial from the high school's rear parking lot. Also, 4 granite park benches will be put in place on the concrete pad, along with landscaping around it. There will also be 2 500-watt LED fixtures installed to allow the flag to be uplit at night. Some 750 bricks will line the perimeter of the memorial area and the sidewalk leading to it. Among the bricks will be more than 90 engraved, personalized bricks that have already been purchased by community members to support the project. Kingren said that as more personalized bricks are purchased over time, they will replace the blank bricks that are there. There are 4x8 bricks being sold for $100 apiece, as well as some 8x8 bricks for $250 each. The bricks, which can be engraved with names of family members or friends, for example, are available for purchase through thatsmybrick.com/paxtonflag or by filling out an order form and dropping it off or mailing it to the Frederick Community Bank, 106 North Market Street, Paxton. Fundraising for the gigantic landmark, to be known as Paxton Grand Old Flag, began on Flag Day in June 19th. As of recently, $43,432 had been raised, according to Cody Keitzman, a member of the Paxton Grand Ole Flag Committee. That number includes funds donated to the Paxton Grand Ole Flags Project account at the Frederick Community Bank. Also, proceeds from the sale of the personalized bricks and donations towards the park benches. For more information on the project, people can contact Kingren at 217-202-6398 or Keitzman at 217-379-2336. Turning now to the front page of the Ford County Record, new welcome sign installed in Buckley. The Buckley State Bank is celebrating its 100th year of service in the community this year. As part of the celebration, Buckley State Bank President Jackie Weber said the bank was the primary donator to the village for the purchase and installation of the new digital welcome sign in Buckley. She said several other organizations and community members also donated to help pay for the sign. Weber said the sign was installed in early June, and people have reacted positively to the new sign. She said the sign replaced the previous Lions Club sign, which had been a staple of the community. Weber said the sign is used to advertise nonprofit groups and events, as well as the Dutch Masters games and anything else going on in town. Buckley State Bank had planned on presenting other events to celebrate its 100th year, Weber said, but those plans have been put on hold until next year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. All of those events have been canceled until next year, she said. We'll be celebrating our 100th year next summer. Weber said Buckley State Bank is proud to continue to support the community as it has for the last 100 years. Buckley State Bank is a supporter of our local community and farmers, and we're very proud to continue to support them for the next 100 years. To learn more about the services provided by Buckley State Bank, visit www.buckleystatebank.com or call 217-394-2531. And also from the record, PBL Superintendent releases plan summary for coming year. Paxton Buckley Superintendent Cliff McClure released a summary of COVID-19 related mandates and how PBL School District will implement them in the coming school year on the district website Thursday. The notice went as follows. Good afternoon, PBL families. Although we have been planning for various options to return to school in August, picture became clearer last week. The Illinois State Board of Education has released new rules on reopening as Illinois moved to Phase 4. Our current plan is to open for all students as scheduled on August 19, 2020, provided our region remains in Phase 4. While we are excited to have everyone return, it will look a bit different this fall. Below are the new requirements for schools, followed by what we are planning for PBL. The use of personal protective equipment is required by everyone in the district. Everyone must use a face mask unless medically exempt. We will have face masks on hand, but you are encouraged to bring and use your own. We will also continuously remind students and staff to wash hands, and we'll have sanitizer available. More than 50 people in one space is prohibited. We plan to move some classes to larger spaces in our buildings to allow for increased social distancing. Require social distancing as much as possible. By utilizing larger spaces and our total square footage of usable instructional space will allow us to maintain appropriate social distancing. We are proposing alternate schedules which will reduce contact time and limit student-teacher interaction. Our teams plan to present these schedules to our Board of Education in July and the general public as soon as possible thereafter. Require that schools conduct symptom screenings and temperature checks, or require that individuals self-certify that they are free of symptoms before entering school buildings. We are still working on the specifics of this requirement. Require an increase in school-wide cleaning and disinfection. Our custodial and maintenance staff will clean and disinfect school buildings during the day and will follow up each evening by disinfecting spaces utilized that day. I'm sure this preliminary information will raise as many questions as it provides answers. This is a very fluid situation, and there could be changes to our current plan prior to school beginning or during the school year. Please read all district emails or follow us on one of our many social media platforms as more details about the start of school are revealed. If there are questions or concerns that we have not addressed, please email back to school, that's with the numeral 2, at bplpanthers.org. Individual emails will not be answered, but we will compile a list of frequently asked questions to share along with everyone on the district's website and social media platform. Thank you so much for your patience, support, and understanding as we work together to return our students and staff safely back to school. Next from the Chronicle, attempted murder suspect from Ludlow surrenders. Ludlow. A Ludlow man wanted on an attempted murder and other charges in Kentucky surrendered to authorities on Monday, 3 days after eluding capture in the northern Champaign County village where he was living. Justin R. Harden, 37, told the Ford County Chronicle on Monday morning that he would be turning himself in at the Champaign County Satellite Jail in Urbana around 10:30 or 11 a.m. Monday. Later that day, Harden was listed in custody on the Champaign County Sheriff's Office online booking list. Harden was wanted on a warrant out of Nelson County, Kentucky, in connection with a January 2019 shooting that stemmed from what investigators said was a drug-related conflict, according to published media reports. The incident resulted in one man being shot in the head and another being shot in the arm, according to those same reports. Harden was arrested after fleeing from the home where the shooting occurred and leading police on a high-speed chase that ended at a Waffle House in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. He was charged in Nelson County with 2 counts of attempted murder, first-degree burglary, theft of a firearm, possession of cocaine, and 2 counts of torturing an animal. The unavailability of the victims in the case to testify caused the case to be dismissed without prejudice in late 2019. Last month, however, Harden was reindicted by a grand jury on all 7 charges, and his bond was set at $500,000. Last Friday, when U.S. Marshals Service arrived at Harden's mother's home on Orange Street in Ludlow to rearrest him on the charges, Harden reportedly fled and a 6-hour manhunt ensued, but Harden was unable to be located. Since then, Harden had been staying in Champaign and Tolono, he told the Chronicle. "I can't run from this," Harden said Monday before turning himself in. Meanwhile, Harden told the Chronicle he was acting in self-defense when he shot the 2 men at a home in Boston, Kentucky, and said he was unaware of the charges being refiled against him until just recently. Harden said he was at the Kentucky home to sell the people there some marijuana and buy a rifle for a friend. At some point, one of the men there pulled out a 9mm pistol and pointed it at Harden, who wrestled it out of the man's hand and shot him in the head. "The guy tried to rob me. He pulled the gun on me," Harden said. "As the gun pointed up during the struggle, it pointed near his face and it went off." Another man in the home was also shot during the incident, along with 2 dogs that Harden had said tried to attack him. "If somebody pulled a gun on you, would you want to get shot or defend yourself?" Harden said. "I'm not going to let somebody shoot me in the face." Later, as Harden was being apprehended at the Waffle House, he claimed a police officer shot him in the leg with an AR-15 as he was on his knees with his hands up. While video of that shooting once existed, he said, the video has since disappeared. His fear over a similar experience happening again was one reason he fled authorities last week, he said. "They almost killed me. I barely got out with my life," Harden said. "I don't understand who would go through that hell again." Harden's account of what happened differed with what authorities said occurred. According to media reports, police said Harden admitted to the shooting when he was interviewed by police. Authorities also said Harden admitted to snorting cocaine with one of the victims prior to the shooting. Also, police said Harden got out of his vehicle at the Waffle House but refused to get on the ground. That was when a state trooper shot Harden in the leg. Now, an announcement from the Gibson Area Hospital. A Gibson Area Hospital and Health Services announced updated visitors restrictions. The Gibson Area Hospital and Health Services COVID-19 Information Task Force has released the following updated visitor restrictions, effective until further notice. All patients and visitors must wear a face mask or face covering. To protect the patient population, the hospital is enforcing the following requirements at this time. No visitors under the age of 12. No visitors who are displaying any of the following signs or symptoms: a fever greater than 100 degrees Fahrenheit, a cough, a sore throat, malaise or general discomfort, weakness or illness, nausea or vomiting, or diarrhea. Please do not resume visitation until signs and symptoms have cleared and are fever-free for 24 hours without the use of medications, such as Tylenol or Motrin. Next, we'll turn to the obituaries for Ford County for the week of July 5th, 2020. Rebecca J. Craig, Gibson City. Rebecca J. Craig, 68, of Gibson City, peacefully passed away at 3:30 p.m. Sunday, June 21st, 2020, at the Gibson Area Hospital. A private celebration of life graveside service will be held at the Monticello Township Cemetery in Monticello. Memorial contributions may be made to the Humane Society of Champaign County. Marlon W. Marley Lurson. Marlon W. Marley Lurson, 90, a lifelong Buckley resident, died at 10:08 a.m. Monday, March 23, 2020, at his home. A graveside service was held July 8th at St. John's Cemetery in Buckley with the Reverend J. Kevin Wyckoff officiating. Memorials may be made to St. John's Lutheran Church or school. Norman Henry Schmidt, Milford. Norman Henry Schmidt passed away on Wednesday, July 1st, 2020, after reaching the age of 96 years old. Norman will be buried next to his wife Maxine at St. Paul's Cemetery in Woodward. Due to the complications of COVID-19, the family will schedule a memorial service at a later date. In lieu of flowers, a donation made in Norman's memory to St. Paul's Lutheran School in Milford would be appreciated. Esther Triente Cotman, Gifford. Esther Triente Cotman, 93, of Gifford, passed away at 8:41 p.m. Sunday, July 5th, 2020, at Country Health Care and Rehab in Gifford. Private funeral services will be held at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Flatsville with the Reverend James T. Lehman officiating. Burial will follow in Hull Cemetery in Gifford. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, memorials may be made to Carl Auditory School. Bobby N. Thilmany, Loda. Bobby N. Thilmany, 92, of Loda, passed away at 8:46 a.m. Saturday, July 4th, 2020, at Accolade of Paxton Senior Living. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 11th, 2020, at Glen Cemetery in Paxton, with Pastor Rachel Stockel officiating. Memorials may be made to Accolade of Paxton Senior Living or the Loda United Methodist Church. William E. Bill Dewey, Gibson City. William E. Bill Dewey, 72, of Gibson City, passed away Thursday, June 25, 2020, at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis with his family by his side. A graveside celebration of Bill's life was held at 11 a.m. today, Friday, July 10, 2020, at Drummer Township Cemetery with military rites accorded. Pastor Gary Fairchild is officiating. Memorial contributions may be made to GCMS High School Falcon football team, Gibson City United Methodist Church, or to the American Cancer Society. Marilyn E. Jardes, and that is spelled T-J-R-D-E-S, Foosland. Marilyn E. Jardes, 82, of Foosland, passed peacefully away on Sunday, July 5th, 2020, at her home. A drive-through visitation will be held at her home from 3 to 7 p.m., Saturday, July 11th, 2020. Anyone who needs directions can contact a family member. A celebration of Marilyn's life will be held at 1 p.m., Sunday, July 12th, 2020, at First Christian Church in Gibson City, with Pastor Matt Bowen officiating. Memorials may be made to the First Christian Church or to the GCMS Education Foundation. Robin Lorraine Lane, Kentland, Indiana. Robin Lorraine Lane, 58, of Kentland, Indiana, passed away on Sunday, July 5th, 2020, at Iroquois Memorial Hospital in Watseka. Cremation rites will be accorded by the Knapp Funeral Home in Watseka. A celebration of life will be held at a family member's residence on Sunday, July 12th at noon. Please contact the family for more information. Memorials may be made to the family's wishes. Eileen L. Dorsey, Crescent City. Eileen L. Dorsey, 94, of Crescent City, passed away on July 8, 2020, at her home. Visitation will be on Tuesday, July 14, 2020, from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Knapp Funeral Home in Watsika. Funeral service will follow at 11 a.m. at the funeral home, with the Reverend Joel Brown officiating. Burial will be in St. Peter's Lutheran Cemetery in Crescent City. Memorials may be made to St. Peter's Lutheran Church or the Iroquois Memorial Hospice. We return to the news with a story entitled, Hashtag End White Silence Protest Speaks Out Against Racism. Paxton. The protesters were far from silent. The following are some of the phrases chanted by protesters at an End White Silence protest held Wednesday, July 8th, on the sidewalk in front of Paxton City Hall. White silence is violence. I will never understand, but I stand. No justice, no peace. Defund the police. What do we want? Justice. When do we want it? Now. If we don't get it, shut it down. Use your voice. Show me what community looks like. This is what community looks like. At one point, the protesters kneeled for 8 minutes and 46 seconds as a symbol of police brutality associated with the killing of George Floyd. At the conclusion of the kneel-down, Matt Harper, 2017 Paxton Buckley Lota High School graduate, said the following to the crowd. George Floyd's body was on the ground for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. We were just kneeling for that amount of time. He was gasping for air. Imagine that. After the kneel-down, the protesters chanted George Floyd's name. Say his name, George Floyd. Harper organized the event with one goal in mind, to get others in Paxton to speak out against racism. Saying nothing just worsens the problem, Harper said. That's compliance. Not saying anything is compliance. This is a problem. We need to start speaking out. Harper had some help from friends, including Michelle Morrison of Paxton, who helped gather water for a cooler and helped Harper find information for a pamphlet provided to protesters at the event. Elia McDonald did an End White Silence protest with Harper in Champaign, where Harper attended Parkland College. We really wanted to start something in Paxton, so she's been a big help, Harper said. A lot of my friends, just in general, I want to thank them for being such great supporters of what I believe in. I've had a lot of help, and I want to thank all those people. Among the material in the pamphlet is information regarding an online Zoom meeting from noon to 12:40 p.m. Monday, July 13th, where Harper and his group will talk about the possibilities of holding a Black Lives Matter march sometime in Paxton. The ID is 607-439-1545, and the password is 313-663. Anyone with questions can contact the group at paxtonblm.endingoursilence@gmail.com. We've got to stick together, Harper said. We've got to figure things out and do this. Hopefully more people would contribute. I just really want people to initiate it, not just me, but other people, because it takes a community to do this. At Wednesday's protest, the number of participants climbed to around 30, an attendance that came as no surprise and some delight to Harper. I am so happy, Harper said. Facebook had been saying 15 people going, but then I had so much support, 53 interests. So many people have been interested in this event, so I know there's a need for it. Many people have been sharing my posts on Facebook and Instagram. I've been getting a lot of love on Snapchat and Messenger. A lot of people have been thanking me. I just know this is the right thing to do, peacefully. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the news from Ford County. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.